Well, this is a course, and I understand some of you are enrolled, but they haven't told me who. So if you're in my class, I'd appreciate it if you came and introduced yourself to me sometime. Also, because it's a course, we're going to have homework, and I'll pass this out at the end of the class. And I'll also follow the tradition established yesterday by Elias, and that you'll get 2 weeks to do the homework. Now, although this is a class, it's not like an ordinary graduate course. And, well, let me put it this way. My original email message from Eurus said that I was supposed to talk once a week for an hour and a half to 2 hours, closer to an hour and a half, hopefully. And in the 4 weeks prior to the workshop, I should be able to cover enough material from scratch so that graduate students would be able to follow everything said in the workshop. Right. That can't be done, but I will I'll try to run this course for the first 4 weeks as a close approximation to that ideal. That is, I do regard the first 4 weeks as preparation for the workshop that's coming up. And because of that, I'm going to be stating a large number of theorems without proof, only relatively little proof. Some of it we might come back after the first 4 weeks and prove it, some not. Okay, so here's the first four classes. Today, classical descriptive set theory. Next week, effective methods, that means recursion theory, and strong axioms, that means anything beyond ZFC. And in descriptive set theory, of course, this is two separate topics, but it'll be one class. Now, the word classical has two different meanings as applied to descriptive set theory. Sometimes it means no recursion theory. Sometimes it means no strong axioms. So this is classical in both senses. Third, equivalence relations in descriptive set theory. And fourth, Polish groups actions, which is what some people call dynamics, hence the name dynamics in the title. Okay, so now for today's class, all of classical descriptive set theory in an hour and a half. Another thing I forgot to mention, there's a lot of books on descriptive set theory, but two in particular I want to mention. Virtually everything I say, I think literally everything I say today, can be found in Kekre's Classical Descriptive Set Theory. And almost everything I say next week will be found in Moskovakis' Descriptive Set Theory. As for equivalence relations, I'm hoping somebody writes a book in the next 2 weeks. Now, these two books are going to be the Fields Institute equivalent of being put on reserve, which means Pauline will have those two books. And you can get them if you want. Okay, now, classical descriptive set theory. First, the context in which we're going to be working in is Polish spaces, which is a separable, completely metrizable space. And there's no shortage of examples. There's the reals. Now, set theorists will call anything the reals, but I try to control myself and use that word for the real reals as calculus. Okay, now a finite or countable product of Polish spaces is Polish. A subspace of a Polish space is Polish if and only if it's G delta. Okay, now we got all of them. So we got a subspace. The unit interval is Polish. And we've got countably many copies. I'll write it like this, I guess. Some people might write it like this. Hilbert cube. And all the G delta subspaces of the Hilbert cube are Polish spaces. And up to homeomorphism, that's all of them. But there's some other, they're not always presented in that way. So let me give some other examples. Very important space, the countable discrete space. Topologists don't pay enough attention to this space, but the script is set there, it's like it. Okay, and therefore we have the bare space. Okay, all infinite sequences. This is actually homeomorphic to the irrationals, which is not particularly relevant. And the Cantor space, all infinite binary sequences. And as far as the pure theory goes, these are the three most important spaces. And as we'll see, for descriptive set theoretic purposes, for theoretical purposes, all uncountable polar spaces are the same. So frequently, they just work with, especially in books written by logicians, they just work with these three spaces and forget the rest. But of course, if you want to apply it and look at examples, then there are concrete spaces that come up. Here's two more examples. We have function spaces. So if K is compact and X is Polish, we have C, K, X, all functions from K into X, all continuous functions from K into X. And the metric, the distance between F and G, is the sup over X over Y and K of F. The distance between F of Y and G of Y, where this is the X metric. And if X is the reals, then we'll just write it C of K, which is actually more than a Polish space, it's a Banach space. And another example is the hyperspace. I'll write it like this. If X is Polish, we have the hyperspace script K of X. So the points are compact subsets of X. And our metric, the distance between K and L, is the sup of the distance in X between a point X and L, the distance in X between a point Y and K, where the supremum is taken over all X in K and Y in L. That's actually got a name. It's called the Hausdorff metric, and the topology it induces is sometimes called the Via-Torres topology. Okay, so there's some examples of polar spaces. I should, since Banach spaces are,
So your K is in your you'll see a pay extra that if you come back next week. Come back next Friday.
Yes, yeah. I meant to say compact Polish, which is the same thing, but you're right. Thank you. By the way, feel free to ask questions and to correct me, but I have to warn you, this is being recorded and going on the internet, so your questions will be heard around the world. Okay, this is a big Bonnock-based program at the Fields Institute this year, I should add another example, two more examples, a separable Bonnock space with the norm topology is Polish, and the dual unit ball with the weak star topology is Polish. Now, I want to talk about some more pre-descriptive set theory, namely trees. Okay, so this word tree has a different meaning in every subject, but in descriptive set theory, a tree on A is a set of finite sequences from A closed under initial segment . So these are trees of height at most omega, but particular trees. The ordering is one sequence being an initial segment of the other. And the ordering is backward from what you might think. Okay, if we like to write, well, let's look at the full tree on 2. Okay, there's the empty sequence, and then there's the 2 length 1 sequences. Okay. And my trees grow down. And, well, we can talk about a branch through T, okay? A branch through T let's put it this way. F in A to the omega is a branch through T if for all n F0 out to Fn n minus 1 is in T. Okay, each finite initial segment is in T, and we'll use this notation. Body of T, all branches through T. Okay, now the reason I write this going down is the ordering is backward from the obvious one, is that a tree is well founded. Well, well founded means no infinite descending sequences, right? So that means no infinite branches. A tree T is well-founded if the body of T is empty. No infinite branches. Okay, and given a well-founded tree T, one can define functions by transfinite recursion. In particular, there's the rank function. From the tree into the ordinals. So the rank of the sequence in the tree is the least ordinal greater than rank tau for all initial segments. Proper initial segments. Okay, if a tree is not well-founded, it has branches, well, it divides into two parts. There's the well-founded part of the tree and the ill-founded part of the tree. And you can still work with the well-founded part of the tree and define things by induction. Okay, and now it's easy to see that if we've got any set A not empty, then the and we consider the space A to the omega, A discrete, A may or may not be countable, but if it's countable, this is Paulish, otherwise it's not, then the closed sets, closed subsets of A have the form, the body of T for T, A tree on A. Okay, now there's every tree, the set of branches is a closed set. Every closed set has that form. Two different trees could give the same closed set because they may have well-founded parts. Okay, and we also have a Paulish space, TR of trees. This is a closed subspace of the set of all finite sequences . So we consider all finite sequences from omega, which is countable. So this space is essentially the Cantor set, and we got a closed subspace, those that happen to be trees, that is closed under initial segment. So that's another interesting Paulish space. Okay. Now, another thing I want to talk about is games. Okay, we have some, I guess I'm always using A, but A is a set. And we have a two-person infinite game of perfect information. And there's two players who are generally called Roman numeral 1 and Roman numeral 2, and they play elements of A like this. Okay, so perfect information means player 1 plays an element of A, player 2 gets to see his move and then plays, player 1 gets to see these first two moves and then plays, and so on. And after omega moves, you get this sequence A naught, A1, and A to the omega. Okay, now, the word game in ordinary English has two different meanings. One, baseball is a game, and the other, there's a game played last Tuesday. So, in the first meaning, a game is a rule, a set of rules. And the second is a particular round of play according to the rules. I'm going to use the word game in the first meaning as a set of rules. So if A is a set, then we've got a game on A is a subset B of A to the omega. Okay, and we say that one wins a round of the game if this sequence is in the set B. So one has to get in, two has to get out. Otherwise, two wins. I guess I'm defining the word wins here. Okay, we'll talk more about games next class when I get to strong axioms. But I just want to say there's such a thing as a strategy as the meaning you think it is. For example, a strategy for two is a function from sequences of odd lengths telling two how to play. And it's a winning strategy if whenever you play according to that strategy, two wins. Okay. Now, back to topology. Oh, by the way, again, since this is a topological space, we can talk about closed games and Borel games, according to what B is. Now I want to talk about Schottky games and spaces. So let's see, Y is a topological space, arbitrary. And we have the Schottky game. For Y, it's as follows. Okay, the UI's open and decreasing. In other words, the first player that fails to do this loses. And assuming neither player loses for a trivial reason, they play a decreasing sequence of open sets, one wins if and only if the intersection of the UI's is not empty. Okay, and you can see there are equivalent versions. For example, they could be required to play out of a basis. That's equivalent in the sense that if one player wins one game, he'd win the other. Has a winning strategy for one, he'd have a winning strategy for the other. And Y is a Schottky space. If two wins if the thing is not empty. Very important. Okay. Y is a Schottky space if two has a winning strategy. Okay, so the two of them start playing a descending sequence of open sets, and either there's something in there or not. If there is, two wins the game. I'm not making any kind of a determinacy assumption, so it's possible neither player wins. Okay, now I want to define a strong Schottky game in space. In a strong Schottky game, it's going to be easier for one to win and harder for two. Now, we're going to play, one will play a pair. I'll tell you what that is in a moment. So the UIs are open sets, and XI is a point in UI. And now 2 responds with an open set, and it must contain his point. Okay, so the first move, player one plays an open set and a point. Two now plays a smaller open set, but it's harder because he has to cover that point. It can't be any smaller open set. So two plays a smaller open set. Now player one plays another open set, which need not contain this point, so player 1 plays that set U2 and a point X2, and you keep going down like this. And it's the same rules, two wins, if and only if the intersection of the UIs is not empty. And Y is a strong showcase space. If and only if 2 has a winning strategy. I just remembered I wasn't supposed to write in the left corner because this is blocking. Okay, now an example of a strong showcase space would be a complete metric space. So is it clear how 2 can win? 2 just has to make sure that the diameters go to 0 and that the closure of this set is inside that set, and you're going to get a decreasing sequence converging down to a point. Okay, so 2 clearly has a winning strategy if it's a complete metric space. Here's the diagram. We have complete metric spaces . They're all strong showcase. I sort of indicated the proof. So are compact Hausdorff spaces, strong showcase. A strong showcase space is showcase. If player 2 can win this game, he can win the other one just by playing his own XIs. Okay, and showcase spaces are bare spaces. That means it satisfies the bare category theorem. In fact, a space is a bare space if player 1 does not have a winning strategy in the showcase game. It's showcase if player 2 does have a winning strategy. And I must say, I think Choquet had the right idea, and whoever invented bare spaces had the wrong idea. Because this class, well, it's big enough to include the examples you want from analysis, but it's also a much nicer class. For example, it's absolutely trivial that the product of 2 strong Choquet spaces is strong Choquet. And that's not true for bare spaces. In fact, the homework, you're asked to prove that the class of strong showcase spaces is closed under arbitrary topological product, under open mappings, continuous open mappings, and a G-delta subspace of a strong showcase space is strong showcase. My main interest is in strong showcase spaces. It's just that if I gave the definition, somebody would be bound to ask, what's weak showcase? So I thought I would tell you. Let me also say, I'm not the one who chose the title of this course, and I'm not the one who wrote the course description, but if I had chosen the title of the course, I think I'd call it Strong Showcase Games and Their Applications. I consider it very important. Now, the main theorem, I'm going to number my theorems. So theorem A point B is the B theorem on day A. That's so I can refer to them and you can refer to them on the homework. Okay. Y, a matrizable space. The following are equivalent. Y is strong Choquet. And B, Y is completely matrizable. So in other words, the strong Choquet property, it's a way of generalizing the metric space concept of completeness to non-metric spaces. If I had time to prove one theorem, I'd prove this one. corollary, why a topological space, the following are equivalent. Y is Polish, and secondly, Y is T1 regular, second countable, and strong show K. Okay, these first three say it satisfies the hypothesis of the Eurozone metrization theorem, so it's metrizable. And then 1.1 says that it's completely metrizable in Polish. Now I can start descriptive set theory. So what is descriptive set theory? It's not totally clear how one would define descriptive set theory. It's not even... It doesn't help much, does it? It's not even clear what branch of mathematics descriptive set theory is. Math reviews used to give it five numbers. There was 03, which is logic, 04, set theory, 26, real functions, 28, measure theory, 54, general topology. They just got rid of 04, so they're closing down, and current trends continue. In 50 years, they should be able to figure out how to classify it. The definition I'm going to give is one that I think would be agreeable to all logicians who call themselves descriptive set theorists, but it would not be agreed to by logicians who are not descriptive set theorists or by descriptive set theorists who are not logicians. So, descriptive set theory is the study of definable sets and functions in Polish spaces. The important word there is definable. Probably the most important divide in set theory is between arbitrary sets of reals and definable sets of reals. So if the set theory splits in two, that's how it's going to split. Okay, now, what's the motive? Well, there's a big difference. For example, take Lebesgue measure. Everybody knows there's a set of reals which is not Lebesgue measurable. But nobody has ever written down an explicit definition of such a set, so it may be the case that all definable sets are Lebesgue measurable, whatever definable means. As far as counterexamples to the continuum hypothesis, well, we don't really know if there are any, but there might be. And still, you could ask, well, maybe there are no definable counterexamples. Every definable set satisfies the continuum hypothesis. So that's part of the motivation. Well, what does definable mean? Well, there are all kinds of ways to define definable. You come up with a class of definable sets, start working with it. One class would be the Borel sets. It may not be, by definable, I mean from a real parameter. If it's not totally obvious that Borel sets are definable, it will be next week. Okay, so let's talk about Borel sets. I may forget to say this, but unless explicitly stated otherwise, I'm always talking about Polish spaces. And we're talking about point sets in Polish spaces. Well, everybody knows that the Borel sets are the smallest sigma algebra containing the open sets, but that ramifies into a hierarchy. So sigma 0, 1, bold face, that tilde means bold face, are the open sets. Alpha is a countable ordinal. And pi 0 alpha is a complement of sigma 0 alpha sets. And sigma 0 beta alpha is greater than 1, and sigma 0 alpha is a countable union. A is sigma 0 alpha if and only if. A is the union of bi, I, and omega, each bi sigma 0 beta for some beta strictly less than alpha. Okay, so the pi 0 1 is closed, sigma 0 2 countable union of closed sets, also known as f sigma. Pi 0 2 g delta, sigma 0 3 countable union of g delta, etc., all the way out to omega 1, delta 0 alpha. Sets delta 0 alpha if it's both pi and sigma, and Borel is the union of all these sigma 0 alpha sets, which you can easily check as a sigma algebra, in the smallest sigma algebra containing the open sets. Okay, now sometimes a more concrete way to represent them is if we have a tree, a well-founded tree on omega, tree, and we have a function f from the terminal nodes into open sets, basic open sets. And that's kind of a concrete object, like it can be coded up by a real. And that determines a Borel set by induction on the tree. Okay, if sigma is terminal, we can define B sigma as simply this basic open set. Sigma non-terminal, even, then we let B sigma be the union of B sigma concatenated with something or other. Okay, so for an even level, we just take the union of everything one step below, and odd, take the intersection. Okay, and then B, or B of the empty sequence, the top of the tree, is our Borel set. It's a very concrete way to represent them. And you can easily check that the height of the rank of the tree corresponds to the Borel rank of the Borel set. It also has the advantage of generalizing. You can talk about trees on omega 1 and build up so-called omega 2 Borel sets and so on. Okay, now a countable union is the same as an existential quantifier over omega. If we take the union of AI, I could just go, right, here's A0, A1, A2, so we got our set A, I, X, okay, and now the union of these AIs is just, if we set B, then that says B of X means there exists an I, A-I-X. So union is just existential quantification. Over omega, or a countable set. And intersection is universal quantification. So we think of building up our hierarchy, at least at the finite levels, by quantifying over omega. Just taking a projection. Exists as a projection, so you just project. You take x cross omega and project. Well, later we'll project on the reals, or uncountable spaces. Okay, now for the first theorem, which is actually about the only theorem about Borel sets. There are universal sets. So theorem for any Polish x, y, x uncountable, any alpha, there is a set U, subset of X cross Y, such that U is sigma 0 alpha. Therefore, all the vertical sections are sigma 0 alpha. And that's all of them. A subset of Y is sigma 0 alpha, if and only if it is UX. For some X. Okay, so this is called the universal set. And similarly, for the pi classes, but not the delta classes. If you had a universal set for, say, delta 0, 7, you could diagonalize out. So sigma 0 alpha is closed under finite union and intersection, countable union, these existential quantifiers over omega, and continuous preimage, which, by the way, amounts to plugging a function into a formula. If you've got a formula that defines a sigma 0 alpha set, you plug a continuous function in for the variable. That defines a continuous preimage. It's not closed under universal, this kind of quantifier over the reals, or continuous image. Okay, now that proves that the Borel classes are closed under these, as the Borel sets closed under both and Borel measurable preimage. But not real quantifiers. Continuous image. And this is the same as saying not closed under projection. Okay, now, you want to prove something is sigma zero alpha or pi zero alpha, and this is what most of the homework is. You're given some example of a set, you want to prove, say, sigma 0,3 or whatever. Well, we have what's known as the Tarski-Kuratowski algorithm. Which is not really an algorithm, or people would be able to do it, and most of us can't. But the Tarski-Kuratowski algorithm is as follows. You write down the definition, or a definition, and count quantifiers. Okay, so let's look at an example. Let's consider this space of all sequences on the reals, and we want to consider the following point set. All sequences of real numbers which are convergent. And what I, this happens to be true pi 0,3. And what the word true means here is pi 0,3, but no better. Well, proving the lower bounds is usually hard, but proving the upper bounds, which is what I want to talk about, is easy. Here's how you go about proving it. So you first write down the definition. So you take out your calculus book, and it says that Xi converges if and only if for every real number epsilon, every positive real number epsilon, there exists a capital N such that for all I and J greater than capital N, the distance between Xi and Xj is less than epsilon. Okay, there's our definition. Now the first problem for all epsilon in the positive reals, the first problem is that this is a real quantifier. And Borel sets are not closed under real quantifiers, but we're all geniuses, so we all know that this can be taken to be rationals. Okay, now that's a quantifier over a countable set. There exists an N for all I, J greater than N, Xi minus Xj is less than epsilon. Okay, so now we go and count quantifiers. This is open. Like the set of pairs Xi minus Xi Xj such that they're less than epsilon, that's open. Okay, so this is a for all. That makes this is sigma 0,1. This is pi 0,2. This is sigma 0,3. This is pi 0,4. Haven't quite got it. We need one more. One more equivalence. We've got to realize that we can make this less than or equal to. So for every positive rational epsilon, there exists an N. For all I and J greater than N, Xi minus Xj, absolute value, less than or equal to epsilon. This is closed, or pi 0,1. Closed under for all, so that's still pi 0,1. Now this makes it sigma 0,2. And this makes it pi 0,3. Okay, and that's what constitutes a proof that this point set is pi 0,3. I mean, you don't have to write out all these details, but you write down the definition and count quantifiers. And most of the homework is going to be stuff of that sort. Okay, now let me talk. Yeah. You're right. I have not proved that. Right. No, the algorithm won't tell you that this is the best. That is, let's say it's beyond the scope of this course, but I refer you to Kekris's book. What? Right. Your question is, how do I know this is not delta 03? We don't. No? Okay.
No.
You're right. Well, I get it. Yeah, like I said, it's not an algorithm. That's a misnomer. Okay, so you just do your best. If the problem is prove it's pi 03, and you get here, you know you haven't done it, so you've got to try something else. It's the word algorithm is wrong, but that's the name we're stuck with. I mean, there's an element of creative thought involved. Sometimes a lot more creative than this. Does that answer the question? It's not algorithmic. It requires thought. Okay. Any other questions? Now let's start proving some theorems, not proving, stating theorems about Borel sets. Theorem 1.4. Now, it's not true, as I said, it's not true that the projection of a Borel set is Borel. But it is true that the one-to-one projection is Borel, or the one-to-one image. So the one-to-one continuous or Borel, one-to-one image of a Borel set under a continuous or Borel measurable function is Borel. Well, so the one-to-one image of a polar space is Borel. Converse is also true. Set is the one-to-one continuous image of a polar space. In fact, a closed subspace of omega to the omega. Now, I feel guilty not proving anything, but this is proved in Kekris. If you can characterize Borel set this way, the one-to-one image of a polar space, continuous image. And sometimes this is used to prove things Borel. But there's another way I want to look at it in terms of finer topologies. Write that at the top, preserve it for later use. By a finer topology, a second topology is finer than the first if it has more open sets. All the old open sets are still open, the new one, the finer one. So it's what functional analysts call a stronger topology. Now, if you think about it, saying that this is a one-to-one continuous image of a Polish space, well, just move over the Polish topology, and that's a Polish topology, but it's going to be finer than the original one. So that says, corollary, a point set in a polar space the following are equivalent. A is Borel, polar space X. A is Borel. There exists a finer Polish topology on X in which A is open. Well, we could also do it for the complement of A and therefore make it Clopin. And there exists a finer topology on X in which A is open. Exists a finer topology T on X in which A is open such that T is regular second countable strong shell K. Because that says the same thing as Polish. You of course get T1 for free because it's finer. Well, similarly, Borel, just as Borel sets can be made open or Clopin by refining the topology, Borel functions can be made continuous by refining the topology. And only Borel functions, yes.
You want to say that you don't answer that question?
Which is the T?
The collection of Borel sets from X is not increased.
Yeah, that's true, but I mean that's an additional property, right? Okay. Because the only open sets that you can add this way are in fact old Borel sets. Yeah, so these new topologies have the same Borel structure. They have the same open sets but different Borel sets. Now, another point I want to bring up here is that if I take a union of a chain of increasingly finer Polish topologies, the union of that chain, the smallest topology finer than all of them, is also Polish. And so that says the Polish topology. So what that says is, for almost every countable collection of Borel sets, i.e., for a CUB collection, for a CUB family of countable collections, script B is a basis for a Polish topology. And we can only do this with Borel sets. If you've got a non-Borel set, there's no way to make it open in a Polish topology, in a finer Polish topology. And I wanted to keep that. Another theorem about Borel sets. Let X and Y be uncountable polar spaces. They are Borel isomorphic i.e. there is a bijection F such that F and F inverse are Borel measurable. So it moves Borel sets to Borel sets in both directions. So if we only care about what's happening up to Borel sets, which is usually the case, there's only one uncountable space, which is why frequently descriptive set theorists just take one space like omega to the omega. Okay, well, the sigma zero alphas were defined by projecting over omega. Now we can project over the reals. And we get the projective hierarchy, a larger class, larger classes of definable sets. Sigma 1, 0 is sigma 0, 1, or open. Pi, 0, n sets are complements. Sigma 0, n sets. And sigma 0, n plus 1 is now what quantify over the reals. So what does that mean? B is sigma 0 n plus 1 if and only if B has a definition of this form. One. They're all ones. Also bold face. Next class will be the light face. Okay, so you start with the open, you take a projection, or equivalently apply an existential quantifier, or equivalently you apply a continuous image, and then complement, continuous image, complement, you build up another hierarchy. Now this R can actually be any uncountable polar space, can be bare space, or the space of C01 or whatever, because of this theorem, because everything we care about is invariant under Borel isomorphism. So you can say there exists a continuous function, or there exists a compact subset of R12, or whatever. Okay, and here's delta 0n is sigma, one end, sigma intersect pi, both. Okay, so here's what it looks like. Build out larger and larger collections. They're all Borel. Okay, now we've got a theorem. Similar to the Borel case. What am I up to? 7. Sigma 1n and pi 1n have universal sets. Again, the delta classes do not, because you could diagonalize out if you did. Now let's talk about closure and non-closure. Sigma 1n is closed under real quantifier, or actually any polar space projection Borel image or pre-image. Not closed under for all, or the dual of projection. So that means pi1n is closed under for all, but not exist, and not under projection. Not under image, which is pretty much the same as projection. Since sigma1n is closed under Borel image and pre-image, by this theorem, you know, when we've got this Borel isomorphism preserves sigma1n sets. So like I said before, there's only one space as far as the abstract theory goes. Okay, now let's try the Tarski-Kuratowski algorithm, so-called, on some projective sets. So if we go into the space of trees, and let's consider the point set of well-founded trees. Well, I claim, okay, so the problem is prove that's pi 1 1. That means you're allowed one universal, I didn't say that, I should have said, okay, pi, let's put it this way, pi 1 1 is not sigma 1 1. Okay, using some high-powered logic, since Borel is closed under complement. Okay, so pi 1-1 is anything you get by applying a universal quantifier to a Borel matrix. Sigma 1-1 is an existential quantifier. So what does it mean? There's no infinite branch. Okay, so T is well-founded if and only if, for all x in omega to the omega, there exists an n such that x of n is not in T. And this is Borel, in fact, open in TR. And we're applying this universal quantifier, so that's pi 1-1. Okay, how about the differentiable functions? Go into this space. And if we consider the set that are differentiable, well, f is differentiable means for all x, f prime x exists, and this is Borel, so what I mean here is all x f element of R of 0, 1 cross C 0, 1. Okay, this is a Borel set in the product space. And then we apply the universal quantifier, so it's pi 1, 1. So that constitutes a proof. Now, it happens to be true pi 1-1, but that's, in other words, you need a universal quantifier to define it. It's not sigma 1-1. That's much harder. These kinds of theorems are, actually, they're pretty interesting, but they have nothing to do with equivalence relations and group actions. So it's probably not worth the trouble of proving things such as this set is not Borel or not sigma 1-1. Okay, now I want to talk particularly about sigma 1-1 sets. Sigma 1-1 sets are also called analytic sets. And there's a number of ways to look at it. Okay, we've already seen it's the projection of a Borel set. Or it's the continuous image of a Borel set. And there's also a tree representation. Well, remember, let's consider closed sets in omega to the omega cross omega to the omega. These are the body of a tree, where T is a tree on omega squared. I'm identifying a sequence of pairs with a pair of sequences here. Well, the projection of a closed set just means the first coordinate. So if we have T a tree on omega squared, and then we define AX to just mean there exists a Y in omega to the omega, such that the pair XY is a branch through the tree. Okay, A is sigma 1-1, and every sigma 1-1 set has such a representation. So we have what's known as this P of T, the projection of a tree. Well, you've got to be a little careful here. I was talking about the space omega to the omega, but in general, you have a tree and you attach, what's a finite sequence? That's a basic open set. Okay, so a sigma 1-1 set in X is P of T, where T is a tree on omega, and to each node you attach a basic open set. And so a point in X is in the sigma 1-1 set. If there's a branch through the tree and you go down that in the intersection of those open sets. So that's a tree representation. Okay, so we got several representations of sigma 1-1 set, projection of a Borel set, the tree representation. That's the interesting one, though, the finer topology representation. Where are we? 1.8. So I didn't lose count. Okay, A is a point set in a polar space X. The following are equivalent. First of all, A is sigma 1-1, that is analytic. And secondly, this B is an analog of C. There exists a finer topology T on X in which A is open. Such that T is everything except regular. T is second countable and strong shell K. So that's another way. It's exact analog for analytic sets instead of Borel sets. It's a characterization in terms of finer topologies. Sigma 1, 1, if and only if it admits a topology of that form. And we also have an analog of this statement for almost every countable collection of sigma 1, 1. Sets, countable collection, a script B of sigma 1, 1 sets. B is a basis for an obviously second countable, but a strong shell K topology. And only sigma 1, 1 sets can be made open in a strong shell K topology. Okay, I want to conclude with a bunch of theorems about analytic and co-analytic sets, which are necessary or might be necessary to do some of the homework. But you can see I've only got a half a page of notes left, so it won't take too long. First, the main theorem about pi 1 1 sets is that the point class pi 1 1 has the Prewell ordering property. What do I mean here? I mean a pi 1 1 set can be written as a union of Aleph 1 Borel sets in a simply definable way. Let's let T pi 1 1, okay, there is a function phi from P into the ordinal omega 1 called a rank function in Kakaris and a norm in Moskovakis. So there is a function such that for any x in P, the following, no, that isn't what I want to say, such that there are sigma 1, 1 relations less than or equal to sigma, less than sigma, and pi 1 1 relations less than or equal to pi, less than pi, such that for any x in my pi 1 1 set, the set of all y in P, set of all y such that y is in P and y is less than x in this rank function is equal to all y such that y is less than sigma x, which is equal to the set of all y such that I is less than pi x. And similarly, for less than or equal to. And so if you fix a point, everything that's below there, you can talk about it in both a sigma 1-1 and a pi 1-1 way. Now, that does not mean it's delta 1-1, by the way. It does not mean that this relation is delta 1-1. What you have is the following. And you got this pi 1-1 set, and you got a sigma 1-1 set, and they agree on P. The binary relation agrees on P, but they don't agree off P. Okay, so that's called the Prewell ordering property, and it's among other things, well, it tells you that pi 1-1 sets are the union of Aleph 1 Borel sets. Now, this has some consequences. Most of the theory of pi 1-1 and sigma 1-1 sets can be deduced from this. Yes? What? This is my y-axis. Here? No, that's what this means. This binary relation, this relation in the plane will be true. For fixed x, y will be, the pair xy will be in this binary relation, if and only if y is in P and lower. So you can say in a sigma 1-1, in a sigma 1-1 way, you can define the reals which are in P and below x in the norm, and uniformly in x. So one consequence of this, 1.8, this is theorem 1.9. Okay, theorem 1.10. Two disjoint sigma 1-1 sets can be separated by a Borel set, i.e., A1, A2, sigma 1-1, A1 intersect A2 empty. There exists a Borel B with A1 a subset of B and B intersect A2 empty. Here's A1, here's A2, and we always separate by a Borel B. False for pi 1-1. And the corollary delta 1-1 is Borel. If a set is both sigma 1-1 and pi 1-1, you apply that to a sigma 1-1 set and its complement, separated by a Borel set. So that's another way to show a set is Borel, is to show it's delta 1-1. If it's got a sigma 1-1 definition, and it's also got a pi 1-1 definition, then it must be Borel, although this theorem won't tell you anything about the Borel rank. So, for example, if I look at the piece of everything below x, that's sigma 1-1 and pi 1-1, therefore delta 1-1, therefore Borel. Okay, now, pi 1-1 is not closed under existential quantifier, but remarkably enough, it is closed under this quantifier. This is red, there is exactly one x. So that's 111 here, 112. Okay. If Q is pi 1-1 and P is defined by saying there's exactly one X QXY, then P is pi 1-1. Okay. So, This theorem is also useful for showing that some sets are pi 1-1. For example, if we go into this space and we consider all f such that f prime exists, it's differentiable except at exactly one point. Okay, so this is all continuous functions that are differentiable except at exactly one point. Now, naively, that seems to require an existential quantifier to define it. You've got to say there is a point. So it seems to be sigma 1-1 or sigma 1-2 or something. But that's this kind of quantifier. There's exactly one x. F prime x does not exist. Okay, this is Borel. So that shows that this set is pi 1-1. Okay, one last theorem, and then I'll shut up. I've mentioned the tree representation for sigma 1-1. Okay, a set sigma 1-1, if and only if it's the projection of a tree on omega cross omega. Well, there's a similar theorem for sigma 1-2, and I think Paul Larson mentioned it in his talk in the preliminary course a couple weeks ago, but let me just mention it again. That will be my last theorem. Okay. Quit on a lucky number. A subset of X if X is Paulish. If A is sigma 1-2, then A is the projection of a tree on omega cross omega 1. So there's this tree, and you appoint an A if there's some branch where you ignore the second coordinate, the omega 1 coordinate, look at the first coordinate, that's the point. Let's take this to be omega to the omega. Again, since all spaces are Borel isomorphic, we might as well assume it's omega to the omega. Makes things more concrete. Now, in the sigma 1-1 case, we had a converse. Anything that's a projection of a tree on omega is sigma 1-1. Well, here you've got problems if you want a converse. For example, assuming the axiom of choice and the continuum hypothesis, any set of reals is trivially the projection of a tree on omega cross omega 1. So the best you can hope for is consistency. It is consistent that the converse is true. And assuming the full axiom of determinacy, which contradicts the axiom of choice, and is the sort of thing I will talk about next class, the converse is true. But certainly in ZFC, we can't hope to get the converse. Well, that's it for today, except for homework. So